at one point in your life, you should definitely like change absolutely everything about you and see what it's like. See how it goes.
Welcome to The One You Feed. Throughout time, great thinkers have recognized the importance of the thoughts we have. Quotes like garbage in, garbage out, or you are what you think ring true. And yet, for many of us, our thoughts don't strengthen or empower us. We tend toward negativity, self-pity, jealousy, or fear. We see what we don't have instead of what we do. We think things that hold us back and dampen our spirit. But it's not just about thinking. Our actions matter. It takes conscious, consistent, and creative effort to make a life worth living. This podcast is about how other people keep themselves moving in the right direction, how they feed their good wolf. Thanks for joining us. Our guest today is Julian Smith, CEO of Breather, an on-demand relaxation company that helps you find beautiful, practical spaces that you can reserve on the go. Julian is also a New York Times best-selling author of three books. Two of these, Trust Agents and The Impact Equation, were written with one of our other fantastic guests, Chris Brogan. The third book, called The Flinch, has consistently remained one of the top-read Kindle books since it was published in 2011. Julian's online work has been read by millions. Here's the interview.
Hi, Julian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. I'm a big fan of your book, The Flinch, and I've read it several times. It's really wonderful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I put enough work into it. I hope that it was good at the end. I'm happy you liked it.
Yes. So our podcast is based on the parable of two wolves, where there's a grandfather who's talking with his grandson, and he says, in life, there are two wolves inside of us that are always at battle. One is a good wolf, which represents things like kindness and bravery and love, and the other is a bad wolf, which represents things like greed and hatred and fear. And the grandson stops and he thinks and he says, well, grandfather, which one wins? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. Mm. So I'd like to start off by asking you what that parable means to you in your life and in the work and writing that you do.
Yeah. So, I'm familiar with the parable, and I don't know what does it mean to me. I think it's just more about reinforcing habits at its core. Like it's very easy to sort of fall into that kind of magical thinking or whatever. But to sort of bring it down to its core message, which is really about like build the habits that you, even if you're not that person, build the habits so that you can become that person that you want to be, right? And that's a quest that can last a lifetime and maybe even should, which is why I think that story is very insightful and true and can be told probably over, you know, we'll still tell that story to our kids and they'll tell it to their kids maybe.
Exactly. And so what are some of those habits you think that are important for you that you work to build to help you be the person you want to be?
It's funny because you're asking me so directly and I'm so not used to being asked directly. So the answer is, what am I constantly working towards? I have a million different habits that I'm trying to build at any given time. And when I wrote that book, The Flinch, it was published in 2011. It's a totally different place than where I am now. So I'll try to explain that difference so that you, the listener, can appreciate exactly what it is that is different and how that sort of impacts your life. So in 2011, I was starting like weightlifting, parkour, and a bunch of really physical activities. And basically the book goes into this detail about how the physical action of flinching is akin to the psychological behavior that we've developed to shy away from challenge. And we do that over a period of a whole lifetime. So that's what I did then is I wrote books for a living. I got advances from publishing companies and I would just write about ideas that I thought were really interesting. And my life was, it did not, it only had the challenge that I decided to put into it. And so that would mean things like, I was very heavily into like physical exercise and training and all these things. Also, I was challenging myself to write a book that was incredibly difficult and and hard to become, to make it as pure as I could. And I hope I've succeeded at that. To contrast that to what I do now, I run a startup with several million dollars in funding that I started. That was a crazy idea that no one believed in, and now that has a great deal of its own momentum in the public eye. And I have 10 employees, and I'm going to 30 employees. And so I have a totally different life than I had 3 years ago. And I can just see all of my habits breaking down. So I was so good at taking care of myself, at eating properly, at all these like positivity things. Like I was very much in that whole self-help kind of mindset, but trying to remove any magical thinking out of it. And now I still am that person who cares about those things, but I understand when people are like, I just don't have the time and all those things. So I'm in this to combat those things. I've developed a series of really strong habits, which is like certain, you know, time, very rigorous, like time to wake up, check email, certain time, inbox zero every day. You know, I have a gratitude diary, like all these that are almost like religious rituals to keep me sane. And I mean, I don't know if I have a bunch of them, but it just speaks to how under stress you can become a totally different person, which is not at all the person that you want to be if you're not careful.
Oh, I agree. There's nothing like a startup to sink all your normal good habits. And there is a real, I think everybody that's, and not just startups or entrepreneurs, but anybody who is working really hard on something, being able to do those other things that are, for lack of a better word, more nourishing to our spirit or to our you know, mental and emotional health and our body, those things fall away pretty quickly. And I agree, there's a lot of discipline involved in trying to stay on top of those things. It's a constant challenge.
Yeah, it totally is. And it really, the great irony of that whole thing actually is that the book that you were talking about at the beginning of this program is a book where you're trying to develop the habit of challenging yourself. And of course, I had written this book, right? And so when I had this idea for this company that I was working on, it's like become a huge part of my life now, I was like, my God, this is the hardest thing that I could possibly ever think of doing. It looks like it's doable, but it's incredibly difficult and incredibly arduous, and it's going to take 5 years or something like that, for sure at least, right? So, but I had written the book, and the book said, do the hardest thing that you could possibly imagine doing, and otherwise, what kind of person are you really?
Right.
You know? And so I had no choice but to become that person, even though I wasn't that person, you know, turning myself into a CEO and turning myself into, you know, like almost like a therapist talking to people that I work with, and, you know, like, and while maintaining my relationship and all these things. So I was very much like I like to think that I had some authenticity in being a talker then, but I was really a talker. Now I've become a doer, and the ability to go and just like, that's going to be incredibly hard and it's going to be a challenge, let's go, has really become a way of life for me.
Well, it certainly serves you well in starting a business or being a CEO. Do you want to tell us briefly about what your new business is?
I mean, you know, I worked on it for a year and a half. So, I mean, you could look it up if you want. It's called Breather, like take a breather. And we provide like a sort of a network of rooms you can unlock with your phone at any time. I don't want to pitch it, but like you can look it up. It's at breather.com. It's doing super well. It's growing really fast. And it's definitely one of those things where maybe it speaks to sort of the message of this show, which is like maybe listening to yourself and all these things is really one of those things where you're starting something and everyone was like, that is totally stupid and you should not do that. And really led me from what I had, which was like a super cushy life, probably, which is like in which I only did things that I want to do versus now where it's like, my life is like a military exercise in precision as much as possible. And you should at least at one point in your life definitely like change absolutely everything about you and see what it's like, see how it goes.
Yep. I agree. So let's spend a little time and talk more about the book, The Flinch, and dig into some of those concepts, because I think they're really in line with a lot of what we talk about on the show and a lot of the things that themes that come up over and over again. So could you tell us, again, you alluded to it briefly, but what the concept behind the flinch is?
Okay, so here is the quick and easy version of that. It's a really short book, and it's actually one of the only free, permanently free downloads that you can get from Amazon. It's not possible. No person can put a book on Amazon perpetually for free, but somehow when we published this, we figured that out. So you can get it for free even now, even though it was published 3 years ago. So go ahead and get that book. And it's super short. And basically what it's about...
I highly recommend it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The book essentially says, here's a bunch of stuff that we claim we want to do. It doesn't matter what it is. It's not what the point is. Like, everyone has their own personal, really important list of things. They could be totally trivial. I want to get married and have children. That's not trivial, but they could be commonplace. I want to get married and have children, or I want to travel to go to Paris one time, or, you know, it could be anything from that to totally otherworldly foreign things that no one thinks are insane or sane at all. Doesn't matter. We're always talking about these things, and we're always thinking about them, and we do not do them. So and yet we have all the information available to us. And this is really like, we're in the information age, and in this age, you can look up anything. Here's how to ride a bike. You can go to wikihow.com or whatever the hell website, Google, it will tell you everything you need to know. Every single piece of information is there. And yet, truly, if the information were accurate, you would have learned to do it by now. Like, if the information was enough, I would speak Spanish properly. But I don't. Why? And so, it essentially, the book is about this thing, I guess, which we call the flinch in the book. And it is like, it's that X, which is like that unknown thing which prevents us from doing the things that we want to do. And it's the secret hidden thing in every action we take or don't take.
And that flinch is, it's a fear response, right? It's, you're describing that we have this response, like if I were to slap my co-host like I just did there, he flinches.
Right, and he doesn't have a choice.
Have a choice, right? It's
not really about him. And you've got these guys, right, that train in this thing called the SPEAR program, SPEAR. You can look it up online, but it's like essentially like flinch retraining. It just really exists, and it's studied by police and the military and all these other people. And essentially, what this response is like, you can never get rid of the flinch, this thing you were born with, that when you fall, that you're going to close your eyes and protect your head. But you can retrain that thing. Physically, it is possible to retrain it. And so here's a kind of mental retraining that you're going to go through. And in parts of the book, you know, I make people go through very simple exercises that anyone can do in their own house, by and large, but that are very difficult to do for psychological reasons, a number of different psychological reasons. So essentially, I'm pointing out almost... And the reason that I think this book works, and it's been read by like a million people or something now. The reason this book works is because it's speaking to you in your own voice that you have in your head. If I was out there going, hey guys, you know, yeah, you, the hosts of this show, like you're assholes and you're cowards or something. It'd be a horrible way to talk to some other person. But I wrote that book, and because you're reading it to yourself, it comes off as being you talking to yourself. And so it makes it okay, I think, to say those things.
And the idea is to learn to lean into that fear. Is that the heart of it? That if we learn to lean into fear, then that gets us over doing these things that we're not doing in life?
You could say that. I think that it's very easy. You gotta be careful about cliches, right?
Yep.
If cliches are cliches, you naturally hear them, and when you hear them, you go, "Oh, I've heard that before." And as soon as you think, "Oh, I've heard that before," you by and large, you're going to discount it. So you have to be very careful in the way that you talk about an idea. Like, and that's why in that book that we talk about it that way, because we want it to be a new way that you heard it. In reality, you know, everyone has written every book ever. I know this. I've written several of them by this point. I've written 1,000 blog posts. Every single thing has been said before. But for some reason, one particular message, it hits you in the right way. And other versions of that message do not hit you in the right way. So when I write the book, it's almost like being in a sweat lodge or whatever. And you're like, you have to actually go there and be there in that book to feel it. Because if I were to explain to you what that book is, like we're talking about it now, it's so trivial that you're like, yeah, I know that. I don't need to read that thing. But in actuality, you probably haven't solved the problem. So you should probably read the book. Even me, I don't know that I can properly explain it. And that's kind of the magic of that thing. And it's why it was so hard to write, that it requires the experience you having to go through it, so you can feel the same way I felt when I wrote it and the same way you felt when you read it, that the several times that you've read it, right?
Yep. And I think there are some things you say in there that I'll point to specifically that maybe give some of the flavor and point out some of the things that I thought were particularly interesting in the book. One of them that you talk about is that you say the lessons you learn best by are those you get burned by. Without the scar, there's no evidence or strong memory.
Right.
Adults know what's safe, so we tend to listen to advice, but we don't learn lessons that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You don't exactly, which is actually exactly what I just said. It's like, I can tell you something 100 times, but unless you feel it, it will have no profound effect, right? Like, and you don't need, and I think the exact thing that I say in there is like, you don't need to throw yourself into a fire to figure out that it's bad. But with that in mind, a lot of things do need to be felt in order to be, for the change to really occur.
There's another thing that you talk about in the book that I really love. And you say, whatever decision you make reinforces what you do next time. And I think that is such a critical life lesson, that's the way I think of the term karma, right? Is that it's like wearing grooves into a record. Is it just every time I give in to that bad habit, I make it easier to do next time. I set that thing in motion. And I think that's what you're getting at there, which is a really profound idea, which is that every moment matters, not just what the impact of, say, you know, let's just use, I'm not going to eat ice cream. Eating ice cream is not just the fact that I ate 500 calories. It's the fact that I've made it easier to do it next time and next time and next time.
Yeah, I built a habit. And, you know, I don't know, they say like the gray matter in your brain is actually affected by the decisions that you make. And the reason creativity is so hard is because the decision process and the way that you think about an idea becomes reinforced over time, you know? And the way that people have new ideas is by and large by looking at something that they have never done before and looking at it in a new way and not knowing whether something is possible just because they have no experience, versus people who have the experience and are like, no, it cannot be done. So with that, and the natural conclusion of that idea is everything you're doing right now is going to make you into, this is who you are. You are the person as you act, right? The way that, I don't know if I wrote that in there, but it's like this whole idea, Krishnamurti is like a well-known Indian sage, and he has this whole thing where he's like, you could take a rock from the garden and you just put it on your mantelpiece, and it's just a regular rock, right? But then over a period of days, if you just practice for 30 days, you're gonna like kneel and pray in front of the rock. At the end of that 30 days, that rock will be like a fucking religion to you. And you'll just be like, I love this rock. I cannot think of getting rid of it. It means so much to me, because you're behaving in that way. and it would be a sin not to walk by the rock and to bow down to it, just because you've done it and you've been doing it your entire life. So with that in mind, and it can put this incredible weight to think about this, to things in this way, can put this incredible weight on your shoulders where you're like, everything that I do wrong is fucking my life. Yeah, I mean, in a way, like it kind of is. And actually, one of my faults is that I put a great deal of gravitas into everything that I say and think, and it's probably not always a good thing, but I really think that that person that you are is being reinforced or being destroyed by every action that you take. The same reason you could probably, you know, you probably always start going up steps with the same foot every single time, and it's uncomfortable to do it with the other foot. Simple things like that, all the way down to why I have arguments with my wife, and I have the same argument every time.
Yep. Oh, I agree, and I think it is easy to be too heavy-handed about that, to be constantly every moment freaking out because I just did something I didn't want to do. There's a middle ground to all of that, but it is a pretty fundamental truth that what we are doing is shaping who we are and who we become. But the good flip side to that is I can change that at any point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully, right? Exactly. You have the ability to do it. And the earlier that you begin reinforcing another thing, the easier it becomes for that thing that you prefer to become a habit, and hopefully it will.
Talk about in dealing with fear, you say you need to start recognizing your fight or flight response. This is the real challenge, what you'll spend most of your time on, because it's such a strong instinct. Every alternative you develop is highly valuable because it opens your options dramatically. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean there?
I think it's a version of the same idea, which is a simple thing that I'm trying to fix right now is that I eat out a lot. And it's funny when you take these like really deep things in this book or whatever that carry meaning, and then you express them in relation to your regular life, right? Because then you're like, oh, this is such a boring anecdote compared to the depth of this thing. But the triviality of the anecdote shows just how powerful the thing is. Like, I'm gonna keep eating out for the rest of my life, and I'm never gonna learn to cook unless every day I was like, I'm going to pick up that knife. And I don't know if you know, like BJ Fogg, do you know about this thing? This method of developing habits, which are called the tiny steps habits. And basically it's like you get up and you have a series of habits. I'll tell you what mine is right now. It's really, really simple. I will wake up, and if I get to my bathroom and I weigh myself as first thing in the morning, very shortly thereafter, I'm going to floss, I'm going to brush my teeth, I'm going to take a shower. Once I take a shower, I'm going to get out, I'm going to take my vitamins. Then I'm going to take my vitamins, I'm going to undo clean dishwashers out of the dishwasher. Then I'm going to make coffee, I'm going to bring it to my girlfriend. Like that is what I do. If I do not weigh myself, none of those things will happen. Like that's how you know, the machine parts of our brain work, is that we're literally like animals just doing the same thing over and over and over again. So building those grooves the first few times, you don't have to think about it as being like every habit. You think about it as one thing. It's like, if you say something like, when I come home, I take my shoes off and then I turn left in the kitchen and I put my hand on the handle of my chef's knife. And then once you do that, you'll be like, well, I guess I have to do something with this chef's knife, right? So that series, it's actually not, you know, people turn, they try to turn, make behavior change into this really tough thing that takes a lot of effort. Oh my God, I got to cook this 5-course meal. No, just put your hand on the knife. That's literally all you have to do. That's why in one of my habit things that I have on one of my apps, it says clean for 2 minutes. And what that really means is just start cleaning, because 2 minutes is a non-threatening number. And then once you start cleaning, it'll just happen by itself.
I'm a huge fan and proponent of that concept of, you know, I set the timer for 5 minutes to get started on things I don't want to do or that I'm stuck on, to just get started. And momentum is such a powerful force. If we can just get moving in the right direction, often that's enough. And I agree. I think that we've talked about this on this show over and over, which is doing a very little bit of something is much better than, and doing that consistently is much better than going to the gym once every 3 weeks and lifting for 3 hours. You'd be far better off doing some small exercise for 5 minutes a day.
That's right. Because the habit is there, and you can do that 7 days a week or whatever, instead of once a month.
And I think you get that positive reinforcement by, I said I was going to do this, I did it, I feel good about that, versus that negative reinforcement we talked about earlier, which is, I said I was going to do this, I didn't do it, now I got, I'm a loser. Why bother? Why bother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can always build from a small base much, much easier.
I totally agree. Exactly. And you don't think about those things. And the thing is, so much of it is managing your emotion, which is the other thing that book is about. Managing your emotion is all about, and that's why, like, the book is so short, because it makes you feel, you're going to read it, and you read it in like 20 minutes. It's so short. It's like an essay, not even. And then you're done reading it, and then you feel good. And so much of you going, I don't know, doing whatever that thing is that you want to do comes from the sense of, oh, I feel good, so I'm going to go do it now. And if you never, so it's almost like a deliberate, here's this thing, you can hold on to it. It's not a candy bar, you know, it's some other thing. And that thing makes you feel good. And then you feel like, you know, a lot of the, there's like almost 400 reviews on Amazon by this point, and they're all like, I feel like I can smash through a wall when I read this thing, which is why the same, you know, like you're saying, you read it quite a few times. Even I read it sometimes, because I'm like, wow, I am amazing. Like, I can do anything after you read the book.
It's powerful. It's also a very, it's a challenging book to read, though. It's not a feel good. I mean, I think, yeah, you do get a feeling of strength from it, but there are some lines, and I'll read one now, that when I read it, I go, oh shit. Yep. That sounds like me. Most people don't actually want to face the flinch. They just want to be in a movie about it. They want the glory, not the suffering. They don't want scars because they like being soft. They don't want to be humiliated. They want respect. They just don't want to earn it, which I think is a very good summation, certainly, of what my approach has been to things in the past and a lot of people's, which ties a lot to this, I expect everything to be easy, fast, and now. You know, and that's simply not the way life is, and that's not the way change happens. And I really like that. And when I read it, though, it's a sobering reminder that if we want to be people that are worthy of being admired, or we want to be great people, there's a sacrifice and there's effort that goes into that.
Yeah, there's a quote in there that's like, it's interesting because I've never gotten a comment about it. I don't think I've ever actually talked about it, but it's a quote that comes from the Quran. And I'm not a religious person, but those kinds of old texts are really interesting to me, both religious and non-religious ones. And it says something like, do you think that you will enter into the garden of delight before the suffering that of those who have come before you? You know, like, it's like, well, look at all, you know, because you just look at these people, I don't know, they're on stage, or they have this great relationship, or, you know, their dog is like just the best behaved dog, or whatever thing it is that you're like looking and you're interested in. And you're like, but why can't I have that? Well, it's because you didn't do anything, you know? It doesn't come by itself, but people, the movie version of it is much easier. It's much easier to watch than it is to do. And that's why, you know, that's why there's so few people like that. So again, it's not about like you being this perfect, you know, Ubermensch or whatever the hell. It's really just like, like be the person that you actually want to be, not the person that is easy to be.
You talk about, there's a line you use, and we talk, it was, again, what I like about the book is so many of the themes that I think come up over and over for us in the show. And that's part of what I'm interested in with this show is what are the things that keep coming up over and over again, because they really point to some fundamental truths and lessons. And one of them is, if you aren't willing to sacrifice your comfort, you don't have what it takes. And I think this gets back to that point of being willing to make that extra effort and being aware of needing to make that extra effort.
It's the same thing when you start a company. You know, they're always like, well, you're going to have to make sacrifices. They just don't tell you what those sacrifices are ahead of time, and they don't tell you that they're going to be hard, for example, right? And when you have when you're getting married and you're like hearing, oh, marriage is hard, but you don't actually feel those things. And then when it comes to, it's interesting, I was a conversation about loyalty a few weeks ago with a friend of mine, and I think he pointed out, and he said something like, loyalty is not being loyal when it's convenient to you. Loyalty, the true quality, comes from being loyal when it is not an easy decision. That's what loyalty is. It's not just like, I'm loyal when I feel like it. It's I'm loyal when it's difficult. I'm loyal at war, not at peace. And so it's really easy to have this rose-colored glasses about yourself. And again, like talking about it right now, I can only probably talk about it in relation to myself. Because if I talk about it in relation to you or to, you know, you, the listener or whatever, then I'm like, I'm a dick. But it's like, let's not have rose-colored glasses about ourselves, because it does nobody a disservice. Somebody, you know, a friend of mine has two kids, and he just said, oh God, now I have to be that person that my kids would admire. You know, right. I don't have a choice. Now my kids have to admire somebody, you know, they're going to be judging me. I better be the person that they want as a dad.
I think that whole thing points to this idea that there's no, like, you know, courage. There's no courage unless there's fear. There's nothing to be courageous about unless there's fear. And in an attempt a lot of times to eliminate all negativity from our lives or all difficult events, we end up in a position where we eliminate all our ability to build those muscles because we're never confronted with anything, because we just simply say, that doesn't feel good. I don't want that thing, or I don't want a life that has this or that in it. But almost all great lives have a pretty healthy degree of struggle, challenge, suffering.
Right, and you can see this in the what do they call it? The hero's journey, like that Joseph Campbell model, 12 steps to get from going from regular person to hero with the sword that kills the dragon and then returns from a great quest and all these other things, right? And you're just looking at the quest and you're like, you can always be like, okay, so where am I in this quest right now? There's a set step in the quest. It's called the refusal to the call. So first there's a call, which is, here's this great thing. You were called to do it. You know, the lady comes out of the lake and she hands you like a flower or some other, you know, mythical story. And then part of that 12-step journey, which is not like AA, it's a different 12-step journey, is the refusal to call, which is the hero says, no, I don't want to accept what this means. So he goes back to his regular life, but then he's given a second reminder. And that second reminder says to him, no, you remember that thing you forgot about? That thing is really important and only you can do it. And then you go out and then the hero goes back and the lady on the lake miraculously or whatever is still there and she has the flower and she gives you the flower and then you go, oh, I have to go out and bring this on top of the mountain or whatever.
So I'm going to read one last quote from the book. We can maybe just talk about it for a second, and then we're near the end of our time, so we can wrap up. But I particularly love this one because I think it ties a lot of different things together, a lot of what we've just talked about. And it says, flinch breaking is all about eliminating the pointless, cowardly, and habitual, and choosing the useful instead. Useful cannot be discovered in the abstract. It has to actually happen.
What do you think that's about?
Well, I think it covers a little of everything we just talked about. You can't, you, you can't discover these things via somebody else. You have to go on the difficult journey. You have to eliminate the pointless and the cowardly and the habitual, and do all those things in order and search for what is useful to you, and only you are going to know what that thing is.
Yeah, exactly. And just like, here's a series of things that I do. Should I really be this person? You know, and it's weird because there's some versions of it that are just about habits and behavior. Like I can do it by putting the hand on the knife so that I can start cooking or something. But other of them are actually mental habits, like I want to remember to be grateful every day or something. You know, there's all these ways that you just think like I'm really a robot or I'm an animal and I can just be trained. And the one layer, the one edge that we have on ourselves that maybe others don't have is that you can actually train yourself.
Right.
But whether to do so is a choice, you know? And in order to do that, you have this layer of thinking that you can hopefully have above yourself to convince yourself that it's worthwhile. And you get an opportunity to do that every day. And you can sort of start over every day, which is always a nice thing.
Yep. And I love that idea of eliminating. I love the categories, the pointless, the cowardly, and the habitual, which tends to cover a lot of ground of where we spend, at least I spend time that doesn't mean anything to me. And I agree with the habitual part, and I say this all the time on the show. So much of the reason that we do this show is because I have to be reminded all the time that I'm making these choices all the time. You know, I'm making the habitual choice or the pointless choice, and I'm not even aware of it very often. And so that's part of why I do this is to keep reminding myself, like, yes, these choices, moment by moment, day by day, add up and they matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not a thing that you just figure out one day and then just live the rest of your life by yourself that way. It needs to be done constantly.
Exactly. Well, Julian, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you are really busy with the new company. Good luck on expanding the breathers. I hope someday there will be one in Columbus, Ohio. And we will talk again soon. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You can learn more about Julian Smith and this podcast at oneufeed.net/Smith.